They say that trauma is stored in the body, like whether it's in a stiff neck or a tight back, or even the inability to even sense pain or pleasure in different parts of your body. And so I started to kind of reconnect with all the different parts of myself so I can move and feel more freely and develop this kind of feminine glow within myself, instead of what I feel like most American coaches kind of push is like, you know, power.
Right, go, go, go.
So a whole bunch of weight and all of this stuff. And so it was a huge transition to me for me during the period leading up to the 2022 World Championships in Eugene, Oregon.
Hi, I'm Ricky Durez. Welcome to episode 37 of the Mind the Ego podcast. Tori Franklin is an Olympic triple jumper, a public speaker, the author of You Anthem, Stories and Reflections of Celebration, and the founder of the non-profit Live Happy Retreats, which empowers youth through travel, mental wellness, and movement. In 2022, Tori became the first American woman to medal at the World Championships, winning bronze in the triple jump. Her success came a year after performing below her usual standard at the Tokyo Olympics. I was inspired by an article Tori wrote describing how she turned her career around by trusting guidance from the universe and taking a huge leap of faith by moving to Athens, Greece. As you will hear, the spiritual athlete's path to success isn't conventional. Tori shares her path of resilience, overcoming setbacks, sacrifice, and the conviction required to make success a living reality. In less conventional terms, Tori explains how she manages subtle energetics to harmonize mind, body, and spirit in order to perform at peak level from a space of playfulness and joy. Would you like to begin with maybe some of your story around the journey initially to the Olympics in Tokyo and then to the medal? If you could guide us through that journey, and we'll then take it from there.
Okay. So the year before the 2021 Olympics, I was training in Chicago with my coach, and we had a lot of like great success together. And it's pretty much what got me on the stage and on the level that I'm on now. But I felt like I wanted to be able to push myself a little bit more leading into that Olympics. So I moved to Europe. I moved to Paris to train for the 2021 Olympics. Mm-hmm. At this point, my spiritual journey was there, but it hadn't quite connected to my body yet. It was more emotional. It was more mental. It was journaling and meditating, of course, but not to the point where my body was starting to have that deeper connection. Mm. And there were some circumstances that required me to move from Paris. Basically, my coach at the time didn't believe that I was mentally capable of medaling at the Olympics. And so he kicked me out of the team. Yes. And scrambling to find somewhere to go. And I ended up competing like the worst I've ever done in the Tokyo Olympics. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I really felt like I didn't deserve to be an Olympian. I felt like I had failed everybody. I failed myself, and I was confused about what was the point of moving across the world to pursue this dream if I was going to come out here and jump just so bad. And so after that 2021 season, I started the 2022 season, and I realized that my career is pretty much going to be over if I don't make a change. That's what was told to me, that I was getting up in age and I haven't been performing. And I'm also in the triple jump. So it's not exactly a premier event that everybody wants to see and pay money to go and watch. So I have to make some changes. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to follow my gut and leave the US again and come to Athens, Greece to train. And it was during this process that I really started to connect with my body and just release all of the words that I had been carrying around with me, all of the fears, all of the doubts, and allowing my body to become more free. You know, they say that trauma is stored in the body, like whether it's in a stiff neck or a tight back, or even the inability to even sense pain or pleasure in different parts of your body. And so I started to kind of reconnect with all the different parts of myself so I could move and feel more freely and develop this kind of feminine flow within myself, instead of what I feel like most American coaches kind of push is like, you know, power.
Right,
go. So a whole bunch of weight and all of this stuff. And so it was a huge transition to me for me during the period leading up to the 2022 World Championships in Eugene, Oregon.
Thanks for sharing that. And also this, I'm fascinated by that shift between the idea of embodiment and embodying the feminine. Mm-hmm. Whilst like how through that shift, how did you then navigate being in that more feminine space and still, I imagine, you know, requiring a lot of self-discipline, pushing your body to a degree or to you know, in a respectable way? How did you find that? What were the noticeable differences from that traditional approach of the power and then really connecting to your body? Like, what were the big shifts?
I think one of the huge shifts was mentally. Just, I stopped carrying expectations. I stopped trying to like overexert in a way that wasn't natural to my movement. And like the big thing is like, I released expectations. I was like, for example, if I have a jump session and I was like, I just say, no stress, do your best. And if I do a jump and it's not like technically good, I don't think of it as good as good or bad. I look at what I did incorrectly, what I did correctly, and make adjustments every time. So then there's never like a bad practice and I'm not leaving a session like, oh, that was a terrible day. You know, it's like, okay, I learned a lot of things from this day. How can I make that different? What can I do to put myself in a better position for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I also developed the mentality, which actually kind of came from my coach, was he's always saying elefthera, which means free, or peso, which means play. So every day, every movement is just free. It's light. It's clean. Everything's easy. Don't stress. Don't put too much on it. You know, we're out here playing. We're out here having fun. We're doing a sport that we love and we get paid for it. Just play, be free. And that released so much stress. And I say, I'm releasing this expectation in training and in myself and competition, but that doesn't mean I don't have goals and standards for myself. You know, it's like, it's a fine balance.
And you, when you say that with the expectation, like you notice that in your body and in your training, like the weightlifting through the mind, not putting so much pressure on it. Almost, it's a paradox, isn't it? It's almost like the less pressure you put on, the body actually has more freedom to move in a natural way. I really like that. Like how, because what strikes me, and I reached out to you having read your content on Medium around these two events as well, because they were close together, right? That was it, about a year apart. So you had that failure on that, what perceived failure, what felt like failure on that stage, followed by this huge celebration and accomplishment.
Yeah.
How did you get yourself from A to B? I imagine there was a lot of soul searching, but what did it require? And what were you initially, like you said, you felt like you didn't belong. What did you initially go through and how did you build yourself back up?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I went through a lot of like a huge spiritual journey during that period. I was reading a lot. I was doing a ton of meditating, and I would do like morning affirmations every single morning for like that whole year. I put a lot of effort into figuring out what my routine needed to be to keep myself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically balanced. Like all four had their rituals, their routines. And I still do these routines in the morning. And I kind of fell off a little bit last year, but I'm getting back on it this year for the Olympics again. So doing these routines is what kind of helped me to build little by little my self-confidence, and believing that I can achieve success, that I am ready to receive success, and that I want to succeed. That was something that was big. And I feel like what really stops a lot of people from being successful, because they say they want to achieve these things, but in their deepest heart, don't believe that either that they can, that they deserve it, or that they're ready for it when they do, because of the pressures that come with being successful.
Yeah, and often like in spiritual ideas or rhetorics, there can be the belief that success is somehow unspiritual, like striving is somehow unspiritual. And yet, I'm interested in the experience for you of how did you know, in terms of goal chasing and dream chasing, what did that feel like? And just for me, I asked that question because the journey I'm on with Mind That Ego and writing and all the associated things, I just feel compelled to do it. And it's hard to put into words why, but I wonder what that was like for you or is like. Clearly you have that, you have that focus, you know, you want that success, but as an inner experience, like how does it feel? To know that.
Yeah. So for me, I kind of receive like these visions, whether that's like through a dream or through like maybe intense daydreaming or meditation. And I'm kind of shown what I'm supposed to be doing and the route I'm supposed to take. And then it's up to me to kind of act on those things. But I feel like when you are truly in alignment with what you are supposed to be doing, everything falls into place so easily. Like it's almost comical because like when I decided to move to Greece, my agent, my mom, and my family friend were all at the same time, like, you need to make a change. And I was like, yes. I know. Anytime. And when I reached out to my friend to talk to Yorgos Pomaski, the man who's coaching me now, it was easy. He was like, we're going to be here at this time. Come and talk to us. I talked to him and he's like, okay, in 10 days, you move back to Europe. I'm like, 10 days, how am I going to do that? But when I go back home to the US, I find someone to lease my apartment in 2 days. My mom is just able to come and help me move my things. The flights are cheap. When I get here, I find an apartment 2 days before I arrive. Like everything just lined up perfectly so that I could be successful in pursuing this dream. And I think that's really how it is when you're doing something that you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That you're meant.
Yeah. What interests me as well is that you had that guidance and that feeling of everything falling into place, all the green lights, the universe giving green lights along the way. But there's that step of prior to that, were there times where you felt like that just was not happening, that it was just red lights, that it was a case of why is this not working out before you reach that point?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think even on this journey, there have been times where there's been complete setbacks. Like, for example, when I moved to Paris and then was dropped from the team 3 months before the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I'm, why? Isn't this what I'm supposed to be doing? And, you know, some people in my corner were like, no, you should have never went there. But I think that was still very much part of the journey. I think there were things that I learned in Paris, and not necessarily from training, but from living in another country, that made this part of my journey so much easier. Because I experienced a lot of like loneliness when I moved for the first time out of the country. And this time I didn't have that same experience because I was more like secure in who I am and just spending time with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like even when we think experiences are red lights, they're not really. They're just maybe yellow lights.
Yeah.
But they're teaching you something else.
Yeah, it's like what you take from those experiences. Mm-hmm. I think there is, like, I've had it, like, spells of everything seemingly going well and loads of synchronicities and feeling that ease. And then recently, for a prolonged period of time, just had a spell of, like, rejection, failure, like nothing working out. And I had, like we said, with your you know, you moved to Paris, confusion. Mm-hmm. Like actual confusion around, I believe in what I'm doing, I feel compelled to do it, I feel drawn, I feel like that's what the universe wants me to do. Why am I getting rejected? Why is this not working out? And that spell, it does seem like there's something in almost that archetypal mythological journey of, you know, there are sacrifices to make, there are roadblocks, but how do you navigate them? And I like that way of thinking in terms of orange lights or just learning processes driving you through. Like how, because that's clearly a big sacrifice, and there are things in life, in this pursuit of success, like you say, you have the dreams, you have the visions that can guide. How do you weigh that against other priorities in life, other demands, like being asked to travel and go to another country and the things that you're then leaving behind? How do you navigate that tension between the vision and the path? And like all the things that don't happen if you move in one direction, then all the things that you're not doing in another.
Yes. Oh, that's hard. So after Paris, quarantine, COVID happened, and during the year and some change of quarantine times, I got to spend a lot more time with my family than I had gotten to spend in like the last 4 or 5 years. And during this period, I decided, I like being close to my family. I want to spend time with them. And so when the opportunity came, we're like, you have to go back overseas if you want to continue to pursue this dream. Half of me was like, no brainer, let's go. And the other half is like, but I just really, really like spending time with them now and having this realization. It's like, this is something I want to keep. This is something I need. And there was like, it was a pull. It wasn't an easy decision all the way around, even though I knew I had to do it if I really wanted to pursue this. So from that standpoint, yeah, I don't have much, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard. You know, it comes with sacrifices, and you just have to kind of find your way around them and find ways where you can still get what you feel like you're sacrificing in a different way. Mm. I think of it as like energy, you know, it's never destroyed. It's just like transferred. It's transmuted. And so even though the energy of me being face to face with my family won't be the same, I can still have those that connection that I'm yearning for, whether that's via Zoom calls or finding another community in this place that I'm moving to. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I've done. And I think that's the same for other sacrifices that are made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it a case of, you know, so deep down that this is what you, you know, this is what you're here to do, that you,
yeah,
there's a part of you that work, like if you, how do I articulate this? Like in that move, how did you discern that this, making these sacrifices and making this move is the right thing for me? Because I think that on one hand you have the need for sacrifice, but I think it can also be difficult to know, am I moving in the right direction to make those sacrifices?
Right.
Was there like a just a knowing that you were just like, this is just what I've got to do?
I think it was a combination of looking back on my journey and recognizing what the lessons and experiences that I've had in the past, how they have set me up for this very experience, how they have prepared me for this exact move, this exact sacrifice. And that's how I knew it was the right one.
Yeah.
It wasn't something random where it's like, okay, now you have to go and ride a tiger in order to get a medal. Like, prepare for that at all. I don't know how to do that. But with Greece, me and my first coach in Chicago, he's a Greek American. We were coming to Greece every summer for 3 years. So I know the culture, I know the food, I know people here already.
Yeah.
I moved to Paris there for 6 years. That prepared me to live in a country alone. So that's making this experience easier. I know this coach's coaching style because of that other coach that I was with. So it's like half of the battle is I'm prepared for it.
Mm.
So I also knew, like, that gave me a lot of support and confidence in this decision.
I wonder what your relationship is to destiny. Yeah, and this.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. What's your relationship to destiny?
I really like that question. I ask people that question all the time. Like, what do you think about this? I think it's like, it's very much paradoxical to me because I feel like we each have a life purpose. We each have a destiny. But it's something that we create as we go. And there is a big life mission that we are hopefully, if we come into our true selves and our remembering, can achieve. But as we go through life and make every little decision that we make, it leads us exactly to where we are supposed to be, where we were going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
So to make these choices, whether to buy an Android or an iPhone or whatever, but either decision that we make is going to lead us to where we're supposed to be. And it may not even be the same one, but that's the one we were always going to make. And that's the place we were always supposed to go. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Because I often reflect on what you're articulating compared to the idea of potential. It's like actualizing a potential. Mm-hmm. Free will is a big one when it comes to destiny. Mm-hmm. I wonder if like the underlying, again, the mythological archetypal arc would lead you to someplace, but the circumstances that like orbit that depend on those decisions. Almost like there's a, like you have free will, but it's within the confines of this like labyrinth of destiny, mm-hmm. that there are similarities. Like, well, you know, you watch it in like sci-fi films, like there might be a parallel universe where you do the long jump, right. You know, like this, where it's just like these decisions, the circumstances that there's variation in, but the actual underlying, like you say, that the true life's calling, mm-hmm. it is there, and then life just gravitates around that. That's That's just me kind of sharing my existential thoughts on that. Yeah.
It's like we're sitting in here in this moment, and there are a million different choices and abilities ahead of us. And every time we choose one, there's a million more from that one. And
yes,
so I kind of that, and it's just like leading you to your destiny.
Yeah, and yeah, like you say, one choice is made, and there's an infinite amount of then choices based on past decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it is constantly like the synchronicities, the signs are nudging you in those directions. I think of it also, I guess a good comparison is the nature of dreams and how they often represent like an underlying insight or an underlying psychological, emotional truth, but might on the surface just appear completely random. And it's like you might have a dream of someone that you know, and it might actually be about someone that you know, or they might represent in that dream just the archetype of like what their energy brings up in you, they're representing. So I wonder if there's that through that manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're interested in it much in like the, because I had a conversation around chaos theory. I don't know if you're familiar with this. The idea of it's like a mathematical model around behind all seeming chaos, there's order.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends how you observe that, and eventually you will see that there's order, and you can look at like the Fibonacci sequences in nature and all this kind of incredible stuff. Yeah. And I wonder if there's that also, that element around the chaos of life. And it sounds like you're in tune with that. Like there's an apparent chaos in life, but it does have that order. It does have that streak of destiny.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's how I pretty much try to like look at circumstances or situations that, you know, don't feel great or don't go your way, and realize, okay, there's something I was supposed to learn here, or there was a decision I was to make and didn't. And how can I do that differently? How can I get off of this little cycle and hop on a more positive one and keep making my way forward?
Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it as well. Like basing decisions also on like being more loving, being more compassionate, not just circumstantially practical, but how can I make decisions that are aligned to that? So I wonder, I'm interested in going back to like your relationship to your body and to this shift. We talk about reading messages from the universe. How do you connect and listen to your body in a way where you know, be it with diet, you know, what you're eating, particularly when you're training, you mentioned not pushing your body too far for what it's comfortable for it as what is natural for it.
Yeah.
How do you tune in and know I'm pushing myself too hard? Or, cause you know, this idea of your body's got so much more than you think, like in the tank, when you're on a run, when you're doing something.
Yeah.
How do you discern that? That process.
Yeah. I think so for me, what I tend to do during training is I like to shake or move or dance just to like really make sure I'm feeling everything and get like really loose and connected, even to like my fingertips, my toes, neck, and I pull out my ears and I move. You know, very small. I just like sometimes even when I'm feeling pain, like in 2022, I had a recurring knee issue, like knee pain. And I used my mind and of course treatment to tell my body, that it is healthy. Every morning I said, my body is healthy. My mind and spirit moves in perfect synchronicity. Because if my body is moving together, then nothing is hurt, because everything is doing the work it's supposed to do. Your body hurts when something is taking on more, because there's a weakness or something, say in my gluteus minimus or something, now my hamstring hurts. So I'm telling my body, no, glute, you need to pull your weight, okay? It needs to work. And I think when you can get like this connected to your body to get everything activated, and like we're a team, guys, you know, then you're able to really push without causing an imbalance or pain to your body.
Yeah.
Because it's true. Your body can do like so much more. Your mind's exhausted and your body can do more. But you have to get to the point when your mind is so in sync with your body that it can tell your body, like, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it, so that it's healthy and efficient for us. Many jump to the moon.
Yeah. So you're harmonizing both body and mind. Do you feel that? How do I articulate what I'm trying to? Like the body itself. In relationship to the mind, like how do you detect, because you know you have that mind to body, okay, like we're a team, clearly a guiding and compassionate way of relating. Do you receive messages from your body as well? Like the reason I say that is I've noticed in going through stressful periods, like how I have to be like relax, and then it's almost like my body's like, oh thanks, and it starts sending it, almost like the body's then sending positive signals. So I wonder as well if you have that in terms of sensation, if you notice that the body is also sending those signals.
Yes, all the time. And I'm very like cognizant of these things, especially like whether it's in training or in like a triggering experience or something. I can feel like, okay, my root chakra, it just tightened up. Something you said really triggered me right there. And I can explore it and see what my body needs from me. Like whether it's a verbal affirmation, whether it's water, or just take space or to meditate. I get those often. And it's very subtle. And if you're too focused on external things or don't have that same connection, it's hard to recognize, like, if you're feeling a little tense in your throat or feeling just like your shoulders start to hunch up when you're, you know, around somebody or something like that, or it's electricity. And being able to be so aware in the moment, so present in the moment, that you recognize what did it.
Yeah, you can see the chain of events through. Yeah, I've noticed that through anxiety, and that's been a big process for me, working with anxiety, navigating it, showing up with it, worrying like, am I gonna, all these processes, and I noticed that it doesn't happen all the time, but I was going through a spell of a lot of stress, and then if I was in a situation that would cause anxiety, my body would actually start shaking, which is like some kind of trauma response.
Yeah,
but I would started paying really close attention to it, and I had to initially accept, I just be with it. I'm like, if I'm shaking, I'm shaking. I had to really just accept it. People see that I'm shaking, that's fine. Like if I'm shaking, I'm shaking, and I kind of accept it. And then as you described, I noticed that if I was really tuned in, I could detect the buildup before my body started shaking, of just the gradual tension. And not even, so I'm interested also in your view on the energetics as well, because if I'm right, I read you practice tantra as well. Is that correct? So you have that sensitivity to energy. Sorry, to make it clear between the link, because for me, I'd realized that it was actually at times excess energy that I wasn't moving through my body. So the anxiety, I wasn't moving through. So there was a combination of noticing the tension, noticing my breathing would get shallower, that would contribute, and then relaxing that. And also, like you mentioned, shaking, maybe shaking, dancing, different kind of movement. So it was that realization, shake it out. How, on that subject, how do you work with energetics, and in particular, how that relates to being an athlete and how it relates to the physical body in terms of, sure, clearly we need good sleep, we need nutrition, you know, that's important. But for you, what role do energetics play in the body and in performing at such a high level?
Yeah, it actually plays a huge role. So first of all, I take it very seriously, like that I cleanse my energetic space, you know, every so often. So I sage myself, I sage my home and clear away all of anything that is not natural to me, or any, even if it is natural to me and it's negative, like, get away, get it off of me. Yes, I don't want it. Also, the thing is the breathing, which I've done in training sessions a couple times, which helps me when I am feeling either anxious or just not connected or stressed about some other life thing, and I'm not able to focus on my training. I do this kind of ocean breath, which is actually used to regulate your nervous system and just kind of relax you. Mm-hmm. It's typically used during, well, you can really use it whenever. So I do this breathing called ocean breath, which really helps to regulate me and keep me grounded. Also, I do this kind of, it's like a chakra meditation where I kind of open up each chakra and align them. And that kind of helps my body to kind of be more connected in my mind and my spirit. And I just feel so like cleansed. Mm. And when I often use my hands, I don't know, like when I'm practicing and even at competitions, sometimes I'm walking like this, and that's me moving the energy up. That's me helping my body to stand tall and releasing anything that isn't mine. And any energy that is stagnant, I keep everything flowing up. And then I'm ready. And then usually I'm at the top just to like spark up everything, get everything ready and aligned. I also always, I tap on my third eye sometimes to wake up. Tapping helps a lot. And sometimes I call, like I have a couple guides that I trust and use to give me extra power. And then I'm so strong and fast. And it's, yeah, it's a big part of my competition and my strength.
I want to go more in depth into that. But first, how do you notice the difference, the way that you just define power then, in terms of feeling that power, calling in your guides, like that energetic mastery compared to what you were taught, the more masculine power?
Yes. So that masculine power is pretty much all physical. It's all like forced. It's all trying to down a door instead of finding the key. That's the difference.
Yeah, beautifully put. Okay, so going down the tantra route and meditation, consciousness, the body being a expression of consciousness rather than the foundation of just isolated human consciousness. Have you noticed, and just to like describe my experience of through an awakening experience of feeling like the body was really heavy, burdensome, my mind really trapped in my head, tunnel vision at times, feeling, yeah, not really tuned into my body, not really aligned with instinct, in contrast to really feeling in my body and actually noticing my body as part of a expansive experience of sensation of different, you know, energy and feeling that. Have you noticed through those practices that kind of experience of the body, not as, like, not in its physicality? And you mentioned like the energy work within, but how does that feel like when you're really embodied, you're in flow, you're like, I'm training well today. Like, what is your experience of your body in that?
Mentally, it's a little scary. Because it's like, what is going on? And then all of these synchronicities happen and you're like, okay, this is getting creepy now. Like, it's too much. It's too much synchronicity. It's too much positive affirmation. It's too much everything in alignment. Like, is this real? Like, and that's when you try to, like, when you get into like your rational mind, and it's like, oh no, this is weird stuff. But I think when you just really let go and accept it, and you know, you're in tune with your intuition and your instinct, and you're moving and flowing, and you're receiving these signs that are telling you to or not do something, or even walk down a certain street. It just feels so magical. That's really just, you just feel so magical and so much love. Like, whenever I'm in that flow, because, you know, it comes and goes depending on whatever happens in life, what I'm focusing on. Still human, so I get sidetracked. But when I'm like really in it, I feel so grateful and so loved and just so like blissfully happy. And it's amazing. And then as soon as you're like, oh, I don't want this to end, then you'll lose it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, then you desperately try and get it back. So where's it gone? Yeah. I really like that description. Thank you. I wonder if you could give some bit of background on a few more of the projects that you're working on, and then I want to then close us. But we're on for maybe another 15 minutes if that's okay with you.
Yeah, perfect.
But just to introduce some of the projects that you're working on, and then I'll ask a closing question, which I feel will be really useful for people tuning in.
Awesome. So, my biggest project right now that I'm really excited about is Live Happy Retreats, which is my nonprofit. It focuses on helping inner city kids travel the world to experience different cultures, to get more connected with nature, because we're not taking them to, like, you know, a city like New York or something like that. Where the first place is the Dominican Republic. So we're going into jungle, nice. You know, barefoot on the ground and waterfalls and all the things to help them get connected to nature, recognizing the importance of being a steward of the land. And other big components are learning holistic tips and tricks to manage their mental health, to get connected to their body through yoga, qigong, breath work, and just to help them really truly recognize their divinity, you know, that their purpose on this world is just more, it's more than just working away their life or trying to be cool or not being themselves, not being their authentic self. And that's really like the purpose of it, because there are so many kids, especially in the Chicago area where I'm from, that live within a couple miles or kilometers from Lake Michigan and have never seen it. They have never been outside the perimeters of their neighborhood, and they've never experienced a life different from their own. And I think a lot of them don't think that they ever will. And that's what I want to show them, that their life can be so much grander than they could even imagine.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome. Yeah, I really like that.
This summer, we're doing our first events in Chicago. It's called Live Happy Week. So we'll be doing a couple yoga classes, an entrepreneur event. I will be doing a track camp and a field day, which I'm super excited. It's like potato sack races type stuff, an obstacle course. That's what I'm really looking forward to that day. Three-legged races, all that stuff.
Have you got egg and spoon race? Is that a thing in America? Yeah.
That's what we're
doing. I used to remember that at sports day. Nice. Yeah,
so that's going to be this summer in September.
Okay, perfect. So I just want to, I want to share that I really, really enjoyed talking with you. I really enjoyed reading your content. I think it can be easy at times to say that people are inspirational, but I genuinely feel you as an inspiration to many people. I really do. I really just wishing you all the best. Where is the Olympics of this year?
Yes.
Okay, so you're in the build up to that now.
It's coming up quick, yes.
Yeah. Where is it this year?
It's in Paris.
Oh, it's in Paris. Oh, okay. Oh, so, well, you were mentioning how different stages of your life. So that's a fitting place for it to be. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. to bring us to a close, I wonder if there are people out there listening that have their own dream that maybe feel, am I worthy of it? Is this going to happen? Is it worth pursuing? What if I fail? What guidance would you give someone who has a dream and wants to go after it, but they're not sure if that's the right thing to do?
Yeah. I would say first to put yourself in a place of silence, not just environmentally, which you definitely should do, but mentally, emotionally, and physically. Just be silent. Silence your mind and just breathe into yourself, into your body, into your life. And everything you need to know, if you just keep doing this, will come to you. You will be guided and shown the way. And don't be afraid to listen to it. Even if it comes up just like for a split second in your head, like, this is what I want to do. And then it's gone. Little inkling. That will lead you somewhere. And it'll keep leading you somewhere.
Yeah. Tori, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation. And I'm sure people listening will too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. And best of luck for your journey to the Olympics as well.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, go for it. You got it. You got this. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mind That Ego podcast. To stay up to date, you can join the Mind That Ego mailing list if you head to mindthatego.com/MFM. You'll also get a copy of my book, Mindsets for Mindfulness, when you join. You can also follow Mind That Ego on Facebook and YouTube, where the podcasts are also displayed in video format along with other inspired videos that I create. Or if Instagram is more your social media of choice, you can follow me at Ricky_DeRizz. That's DERISZ.